Songbooks. I'm used to leading the singing. Please get your Bibles out and turn to Psalms, the 15th chapter. Psalms 15. We are going to spend quite a bit of time right there this morning, and so you would do well to have that text in front of you and to follow along. I think you'll benefit greatly by being able to read the text along with us this morning. One bright sunny day, a man woke up to find himself dead. Kind of a strange thing, but he was dead. He went out to get the morning paper, and he was sitting and sipping his cup of coffee, going through the morning paper, and then he came across the obituaries, and there was his obituary. Now, it's not like he had a real common name like Larry Brown. He was just reading the obituary for someone else that had the same name as his. This was his obituary. The newspaper had made a mistake. You see, unfortunately, the man's brother had died that same week, and instead of running his brother's obituary, they ran his obituary instead. And so he got a chance to read what people are going to say about him after he's gone. And he didn't like what he was reading. He didn't like it at all. The more he read, the more unhappy he became with his own obituary. You see, he was going to be remembered as being the Dynamite King. And while true enough, he is the inventor of dynamite, it just sounded destructive as far as he was concerned. It sounded like something horrible, and he didn't want to be remembered that way. And so from that moment on, he took it upon himself to change his obituary. He wanted to change the way people were going to be remembered him. He wanted to change his image. He wanted to change his life. He wanted to change his own legacy. And so he would not be remembered as the Dynamite King. You know, this time of year, a lot of folks are out making resolutions. They are trying to change something about themselves. And that's an interesting word, resolution, or to resolve. It means to have a firm decision. It means to have a firmness of purpose, to change or convert. But it also means, and it's used in the sciences, as meaning to separate into active parts, to make parts visible and distinct, to separate in components and to break things down so that you know what you're working with. Chemists must break down a chemical and find out what makes up that chemical. What are the components that make it up so that they know what they are working with? A mathematician doesn't try to solve a long problem all at one time. They break that problem down into chunks, into parts. They resolve that problem. So they follow the order of operation, PEMDAS, which stands for PEMDAS? You both have math homework this afternoon. You know, you have an order of operation. You follow things. You break it down. In order to solve that problem, you have to resolve that problem first. And so you can see that in order for us to make a resolution, in order for us to be resolved, we must first firmly make a decision or purpose in our hearts to convert or to change something about ourselves. But also, we must then break ourselves down into pieces to see what we have to work with. We must perform an honest self-examination. And I think the reason that so many resolutions fail is because we fail to resolve. We fail to break ourselves down into active parts. We fully don't understand what we're made of. We don't understand what we're made for. We don't examine ourselves. And so we want to look at the 15th Psalm this morning, because I think this 15th Psalm does exactly that. It asks deep, probing questions that will cause you, it will force you to examine yourself to see exactly what you are made of, to see what your purpose really is. So let's go through the 15th Psalm. Actually, let's take a running start. I want to read the 14th and the 15th Psalm. They're short, but there are distinct contrasts here between chapter 14 and chapter 15, and I want us to spend our time looking at those contrasts. in chapter 14. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt and they do abominable things. We are on page 372. They do abominable things. There is none who does good. The Lord looks down from heaven on the children of man to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. They have all turned aside together. They have become corrupt. There is none who does good, not even one. They have no knowledge. All are evildoers who eat up all my people as they eat bread and do not call upon the Lord. They are in great terror. For God is with the generation of the righteous. You would shame the plans of the poor, but the Lord is his refuge. Oh, that salvation for Israel would come out of Zion. When the Lord restores the fortunes of his people, let Jacob rejoice, let Israel be glad. And then in chapter 15, O Lord, who shall dwell in your tent? Who may dwell in your holy hill? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart, he who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against the friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those that fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. He who does not put out money in usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things shall not be moved. Would it surprise you this morning when you pulled up that there were a guard in front of all the doors? And they weren't letting anybody in. In fact, there was a long line of people waiting to get in. Wouldn't you be curious about that? You would run up and say, what's going on here? How come we can't get in? And someone would say, well, haven't you heard? The Lord is here today. And not just anybody could get in. He's asking questions. He's asking probing questions about you. And only those who answer correctly can get in. I mean, what would you think about that? The first thing I would think about is, what is he asking? It's kind of like having a pop quiz. You kind of want to know what's on that quiz, don't you? What kind of questions is he asking? What is the criteria to get in here in order to worship God? I need to get in. I need to take the Lord's Supper. I want to remember what the Lord did for me on the cross. And I need to give. I need to offer, like we did this morning financially, as the Lord has promised. I need to sing. I need to pray. I need to hear the Word of God proclaimed, and I need to be with my brothers and sisters in Christ. I need to get in there. How do I get in? What are the questions? Psalms 15 kind of paints and envisions that kind of scenario. So much is said in the Psalms about the privileges and the blessings of the righteous man, but here in the 15th Psalm, we get a definition, a description of who the righteous man is. And one's life has to measure up to this standard. Who shall abide in God's tent? Who shall dwell in his holy hill? And then the answer is given for the remainder of the chapter. These are the qualities of life that one must possess if he is going to come into God's tent and to worship him. Now, I realize that God is not going to come here. We're not going to put guards in front of the doors and start handing out quizzes to see who will pass and who will fail. But I do think it's a good idea for us to step back and take a look about those that the Lord does accept, the heart of the worshiper, what we ought to be when we come before God, so that we can examine ourselves and properly resolve in our hearts to be all that God wants us to be. This is God's measuring stick, and we must be evaluated by it. You know, I've gone back and forth quite a bit over the last several days what sermon I should preach. Sue called me on Wednesday night, and I still couldn't tell him on Wednesday night. But then the more I started studying and thinking about what we are trying to do here, and it's already been announced that in the month of January, Sewell's going to offer several lessons on Bible authority. And that is going to be a tremendous study for all of us to understand why we do things the way that we do them. That's a critically important study that we all need to come to a deeper and better understanding of. But then I thought, well, you know, if we are not trying to please God in everything that we do, if that is not our aim, then unfortunately a study of authority just isn't going to do us much good. Because if my aim is not to please God, therefore my aim is to please something else, namely me, then I'm going to do what I want to do. Oh, I'll say I'm doing it to please God, but I'm going to brush off what God has said that He wants. I'm not going to pay attention to the authority found in the Bible because I'm out to please me. And so we have to have it as our aim, our overriding goal in life, to please God in all that we do. And so I wanted to take a look at this 15th Psalm so that we can understand who the Lord is going to accept, so that we can make it our aim, so that we can see wherever we have these shortcomings, we just resolve. We then break ourselves down and we find out where we need to do better. And that's what I want to do. I want to go through this psalm verse by verse and take a look who the Lord will accept and allow in His tent to have fellowship with Him. Verse 1, Lord, who may abide in Your tabernacle? Who may dwell in Your holy hill? This is a good example of Hebrew parallelism, where the second verse echoes or repeats what's found in the first verse, but it really says the same thing. This term tabernacle or tent may in fact refer to the Hebrews' most fond term, where they went and came to have to meet with the covenant God and had a relationship with Jehovah God. The tabernacle, the tent of meeting. Another way this term tent may also be used is it kind of brings to mind the ancient custom of hospitality. And so the psalm is saying, who can be a guest in your tent? And this psalm helps guide God's people to a life of righteousness, not just here in worship, but in everything that we do. And so then in verses 2 through 5, we get the response to that question. Who can come and worship? Who can have fellowship with You? Who can be acceptable? And in this whole thing, what we find is a list of 10 characteristics, 10 traits. There are going to be 5 that are positive, and there will be 5 that are negative. And these are more than just qualities of life. These are qualities of the heart. And what's really going to be interesting as we go through this is the only one that knows the answer to these questions is you. No one else knows about these traits that you possess, but you do. The psalmist is calling on you to decide who you are. That is what He's calling us to do. And so in verse 2, He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. I want you to take a look at this accepted man's walk, his work, and his word in this second verse. This expression to walk uprightly, and some of your translations may say to walk blamelessly, does not and should not get confused with the idea of perfection. That's not what's being talked about here. That is not the aim of this. The idea of uprightness carries with it the idea of wholeness or soundness or completeness. He that walks uprightly is the one who keeps himself erect, kind of like one of those circus acts that walks on a high wire. They must keep themselves perfectly erect. They cannot lean to the left. They cannot lean to the right, or they are going to fall. They must keep upright. Or have you seen the pictures or on TV, the people that walk with, and they have baskets on their head, and they are walking, and they are keeping themselves upright. But if they lean, if they don't maintain their uprightness, then the basket will fall and they will lose everything if they don't keep that. So when the Bible talks about this, walking uprightly, it is referring to the person that is sincerely trying to do right. It doesn't mean that they're always going to get it right. Just like David, who was said to be blameless, he didn't have that sinless perfection, but David wanted in the main to please God. It speaks of sincerity. It speaks of the quality of the heart that all of us must have. This person that walks upright loves to do right. Turn to Matthew. In Matthew, the fifth chapter. In Matthew, the fifth chapter and verse 8, Matthew, the fifth chapter and verse 8, in the Beatitudes, Jesus says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed is the person that stays upright. Blessed is the person that is that possesses that singleness of motive. Unlike the person that we read about in Psalms chapter 14, this person strives to be pure. This person strives to be pleasing to God. That is his heart's desire. That is what he wants. And that person shall see God. This person, in the 15th chapter, verse 2, this person has an upright walk, but also his works are right. He works righteousness. He does things that are right. I'm always curious why some people think that serving God simply means that we go around and we identify everything that is wrong, and all we do is try to stay away from all those evil things. Meanwhile, we leave our life in a vacuum. We may not be doing evil, but there is nothing positive in our life as well. We simply push away all those things that are bad. And that's not what Psalms 15 says at all. Now, in the next verse, in the next couple of verses, he's going to talk about there are certain things that the righteous person just is not going to do. So that still is important, but it is very clear that there are things that the righteous person is actively involved in. He works righteousness. His faith is shown by his works, just like James said in James chapter 2. So his faith is not dead because he is working those things that are right. He is not just trying to stay away from evil. He is trying to do those things that are righteous. In fact, this phrase is a practical expression of what we just read about in the first part of this verse. The person who wants to do right, the person who desires to please God, the person who wants to be blameless, the person who wants to serve the Lord will get a chance to do so. A person that has this right kind of life will always have the opportunities to do right. Back in Matthew the 5th chapter in verse 16, Jesus says, "Let your light shine before men so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." Let your light shine, not to illuminate yourself, but to illuminate God, to let his glory shine through your life. That's positive action that we need to be undertaking. Unless we are positively serving the Lord and trying to do his holy will with all of the power that I possess, then we may say that I have an interest in divine things. But unless a tree brings forth good fruit, then it has to be cut down and it has to be thrown into the fire. So this person that can come and dwell in God's tent, first of all, walks uprightly. He has an upright walk. Then his works are right. And then finally, his word is right. He speaks the truth in his heart. And now, I think the tendency for us is to immediately go and talk about honesty and how we ought to be telling the truth. We shouldn't lie to one another. And while all that may be true, I don't think that's what the writer of this psalm is talking about. Psalms 15 says this person always speaks the truth to himself. He speaks the truth in his heart. The fool from chapter 14 spoke falsely from his heart. Did you see all those striking contrasts? The saints, those that can dwell with God in his tent, not only desire to love and speak the truth from their lips, but they desire that truth within themselves. And they're not even going to lie to themselves in the closet of their own heart, because God is there listening to what you tell yourselves. So where is this salvation mentioned in chapter 14 of Psalms? Where is this refuge? Where are the righteous? Psalms 15 identifies what true integrity is. Unless we are honest with ourselves, because we can deceive ourselves, which is the greatest form of lie. It's just a small step for me to start deceiving others. Psalm 15, this person here is actively involved in cutting out all those rationalizations, all those excuses that make me feel better about myself, because I don't want to talk all those about those faults and those frailties that I have within my life. Instead, I need to be asking, I want to do what is right. I want to work what is right. And that means that I must tell myself what is right. And I'm not going to say to myself, well, I'm just better than most people, and so that's pretty much all I can do. The Lord's not going to hold me accountable for anything else. Or some people might say, well, that's just my Irish getting up when they're trying to explain away all their temper. Well, I'm just young. Well, I've got to go out and sow all my wild oats. That's just the way I am. Or I'm just too old to change right about now. I've just been doing the same thing for so long, I can't change. That's not what this is all about. God's not going to accept those excuses. We can go on and on and on, and we could deceive ourselves into thinking that we are okay, and all the while we are telling ourselves soothing lies. Go through your New Testament and mark and count how many times we're told, do not be deceived. We can deceive ourselves into thinking that we don't need to change ourselves, and that's an easy thing to do. We can lie to ourselves. The man or the woman in Psalms 15 is going to tell themselves the truth even when it hurts. Turn to James. James, the first chapter, beginning in verse 22. James 1 in verse 22. James 1 in verse 22, picking up there. But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. This is on page 812 in your pew Bibles. James 1 and verse 22. But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in the mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away, and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks intently into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. That's the kind of person that we ought to be. We will look into God's mirror, and even if it's painful, we are going to perceive ourselves. We're going to study ourselves compared to God's law, and we will act accordingly. We will make those changes. We're not going to deceive ourselves into thinking that everything is okay once we look at ourselves in the mirror. We will resolve to change. Beginning in verse 4, though, the psalmist gives us three negative traits that we must avoid. In verse 3, he does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend. He does not backbite. This idea of backbiting literally means he has not tripped over his tongue, or he does not foot over his tongue. He has no foots over his tongue. This person not only will do nothing false or shady in what he says, he will not be caught lying about other people, but more importantly than that, this person who wants to be accepted by God, this person who wants to dwell in his tent, is not going to say some things simply because they're inconsiderate, no matter how true they are. And notice, the psalmist doesn't just say, it's okay to lower your voice and say, okay, this is just between you and me, but you won't believe what I just heard. That's not what the psalmist does. If you want to dwell in God's tent, we're simply not going to backbite. We're not going to tear someone else down, no matter how true it is. We want to be accurate in our speech, but avoid anything that is cruel or ugly or not helpful. The other characteristic is that the person who wants to dwell with God does not do evil to his neighbor. He who bridles his own tongue, he who is always seeking to control his own tongue, is certainly not going to give a license to his hand. The person who wants to do right is not going to do wrong. You see how they go hand in hand together. He is trying to be righteous. And also, he does not take up a reproach against his friend. The idea here is that he will not take up a slur that might hurt someone. And notice that he's not talking about you doing the slurring, that you doing the backbiting. In this case, he's already dealt with that. He's talking about you listening to the tale. You listening to the backbiter. If you take up stolen goods and you harbor them, you are guilty. in slander as well as robbery, the person who is possessing those things, the person who is receiving those things, is just as bad as a thief. You know, if there were no gratified hearers of gossip, if people just simply refused to hear backbiting and stopped it before it even got started, then the business of backbiting would soon die out because there'd be no one to tell it to. That responsibility falls on us. It was said that a talebearer carries the devil on his tongue, but a tale hearer carries the devil in his ears. But we do that, don't we? I didn't backbite. I didn't say it. Yeah, but you listen. The psalmist says he does not take up. He will not tolerate a reproach against his friend. Now, that doesn't mean that we just pretend that this righteous person pretends that sin doesn't exist. He confronts it head on, and he deals with head on with that person. But the person of Psalms 15 also knows that every fault and every failing that someone else has does not need to be announced to everyone else. We are not in the business of being the public broadcasting system and letting everybody else know the faults and frailties and the things that other people do that are wrong. It is not our job to even listen to that talebearer. The good man does not, even when it's true, say things that are hurtful and cruel, and he won't listen to those things that are hurtful and cruel. But back in verse 4, we go to a couple more positive things that the psalmist tells us about the person who can dwell in God's tent. In whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those that fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. The person in Psalm 15 really does not care what is politically correct. His convictions demand that he personally know what is right and what is wrong, and that he will say, that is wrong. I am not going to put up with that. I despise that. But instead of that, he will give honor to those that fear the Lord. He will honor those that do right. We owe honor to all good men and women, to all those that fear the Lord, and we have no right to take the honor that is due them and give it to someone else simply because they are in a high place. You know, when we give honor, you know, we think so many times about our elders, those people that are in the forefront of visibility and do those things, and that is so true. You know, we need to give honor to these men that are serving us. You know, and it's easy to say, well, you know, Marty and I aren't always going to agree on everything, and that's okay. My daddy said, you know, if two people agree on everything, then one of them isn't needed. And that's okay. But I should never question Russ's motives. I should never doubt what Ken and Paul and Sewell want to accomplish. They are trying to shepherd us. Never question those motives, but give honor, give respect. But even more than that, you know, that is the visible people that we tend to give honor to. But there is so much work being done. So many people that work and they serve and they coordinate and they do things, they deserve honor because they are doing those things out of respect and out of fear of God. They are good people. And they deserve that respect. In addition, I don't think this is limited to simply that, but simply limited to how I choose my friends and my companions. But if I'm going to dwell in God's tent, then I need to stop evaluating people by my standards. Well, that person's good and that person's bad. I need to start evaluating people by God's standards. Instead of looking at people and saying, well, what could that person do for me? How can they further my agenda or my interests? I need to ask the question, what does God think about that person? And I will treat them accordingly. If they are evil, if they are vile, if they are worthless, then I will think of them as God thinks of them. But if they are God-fearing and if they are good, I will honor them. And this person does not change his word in verse 4. He swears to his own hurt, and he does not change. God will accept a person who has this integrity, who does what he promises, but also that he can be counted on. He can be trusted. And this kind of person doesn't reason, you know, from consequences, well, you know, well, this thing isn't going very good for me. I think I'm going to try to wiggle out of my commitment. That's not what he does. As James said in chapter 5, let his yes be yes and his no be no. And that is simply all there is to it. Whatever we promise, we do. That's integrity. That is just who we are. In verse 5, he does not put up his money at interest. He does not take advantage of others. And also we'll take a look at he does not take a bribe. And I don't think the main point here, though, between these, I don't think the main point is that of simply just loaning money at interest. And the law of Moses certainly dealt with that in Deuteronomy, the 23rd chapter. But to understand the reason behind that is more important, I think. You see, for an Israelite to go and ask for a loan meant that they were in dire distress. They were in a terrible place of personal adversity, and I should not take advantage of that person just because they are desperate. I can't look at that person and say, boy, they really need this money. I think I'm going to jack up the interest rate a little bit and really, really stick it to them because they got to pay me. That's not what the righteous person does. The righteous person is actively trying to do good. And I think about those hotels that jack up prices of rooms simply because a storm is coming. Or me personally, it's all those people that sell roses in February for four times their original rate because they know we husbands are just absolutely desperate. And so they jack up. That is not how the righteous person behaves. He is generous at heart. And this idea of taking up a bribe against the innocent. There are ways, if you have money, that you can bend the law to your own benefit. And the righteous person just simply doesn't do that. I mean, does the phrase, every man have its price, refer to you? You know, I think, you know, from an application standpoint, these last two, does not take an advantage and does not take a bribe. I think of Matthew 25 is what I think about. You know, when we see the Lord who is hungry, who is naked, who is cold, who is thirsty, and we do something about that. That we are generous with the abilities and with our opportunities. We take advantage of those opportunities. We don't take advantage of the person that finds themselves in a needy situation. But we are looking, remember, for those opportunities to do good. And that's what we need to be all about. And so then the psalmist will wrap all that up and say, he who does these things will not be moved. There are those who can be moved because they have no fixed principles. And there are those, though, who cannot be moved because they are as true as God is true. They are as stable as God is stable, and they are as sure as God is sure. This psalm began with asking, who can come and have fellowship with God? And it ends by saying the person who does these things, the person who lives in this kind of way, this kind of person can have fellowship with God, and he cannot be taken from his presence. That's the point of the psalm. To live this kind of way, to resolve to be this kind of person so that you can come and have fellowship with God. And I want really quickly to make three applications of this psalm for us today. The first one is that the 15th Psalm asks us to evaluate ourselves before we worship. Jesus is not going to stand at the door. We are not going to put guards in front. But I think it's worth thinking about, what kind of person am I? Do I match the criteria that the psalmist outlined in the 15th Psalm? And we never want to be caught in such a groove or in such a rut where we thoughtlessly sail through these doors and we park ourselves on the pew and we sit down and we have not given one single thought about what we are doing here and why we're doing it and who I am. We must examine ourselves before we come here. We are here in the presence of God as a group to render praise to our Father. And he is watching, and he is observing, and yes, He is evaluating. So rather than just simply examining our hearts before we take the Lord's Supper, I would suggest that we examine ourselves before we even get started. Know what kind of... Break yourself down into parts. Find out who you are. In Matthew the 5th chapter and verse 23, Matthew 5 and verse 23, Jesus says, Matthew 5 and verse 23, "So, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." Jesus says, examine yourself before you get here. And if things are not right, make them right. That's what Jesus is telling us to do. I need to start examining myself before I get here. Secondly, our worship and our lives must match. It is unthinkable that we can live one way throughout the week and then expect to come in here and think that everything's just going to be right with God. The answer to the question of who can come and worship God is the person who has character. This is the kind of person that does what is right all the time. All of life is dedicated to God. All of our lives affect our relationship to God. You look at the New Testament. It talks about how to work. It talks about how to be a good husband or a good wife. It talks about how to raise children. It talks about how to manage your finances. You name any aspect of life, and the New Testament covers it. And doesn't that tell you that holiness is not only lived out here in the worship, but that God is concerned with our lives outside of worship? He is concerned about how we live all the time. Holiness and righteousness are pursued out there. They are celebrated and encouraged in here. The last application is worship is not automatic. The psalm says that God is going to accept some, but the backside of that is that he is going to reject others. How much do we really think about that? A lot of folks think they're just doing God a favor by being here. The 15th psalm, that person is not doing God a favor. This person worships God because he has the right kind of life. We approach God with the right life and with the right humility. We approach God in that way. Otherwise, our worship is not accepted. Now, again, going back to what we said at the very beginning, that doesn't mean that we're perfect. That doesn't mean that we're never going to stumble, we're never going to fall. But it means that we are trying to please God. That is our heart's goal, and that is our aim in life, is to please God and be acceptable to him. Otherwise, not all worship is accepted. Your worship may not be acceptable, and that may be hard to hear. But not everyone is going to have fellowship with God. We need to resolve. We need to ask ourselves and examine ourselves and just simply ask, am I that kind of person? Can I make that resolve to be right with God? You know, the Dynamite King did that. You know, he did not want to be remembered as the Dynamite King. And so he set it out to change himself. He made those resolutions and he changed himself because he wanted to have a different memory in people's minds. And so he changed it. He became known as the founder of the Nobel Peace Prizes, Alfred Bernard Nobel. Been a dynamite, but that's not what he wanted. Now he's remembered in a different way, and so can you. You can change your legacy. You can change how people remember you, but you've got to resolve. You've got to set those resolutions, have that firmness of decision, that firmness of purpose, and change. And be the kind of person that God wants you to be. Do you want to please God? Is that your goal? Is that your aim? Is that your purpose? It should be. And we want it to be. We can help you with that. We can help encourage. That's what we do here. We worship God, and we encourage and help you in your walk of holiness and in your walk of righteousness to stay upright with God. If you have stumbled, if you have fallen, and if you need to get back upright, we can help you with that as well. If there is anything we can help you with this morning, please come while we stand and sing for your encouragement.